I'm talking this morning about inequality. Inequality, particularly in economics. And if you read the description in the bulletin that comes out, I talked in the last statement about a paraphrase from the musical Hamilton. Let's not throw away our shot. He didn't want to throw away his shot, and I believe that we should not either. We need to make a difference in the world. We all know that income equality, the uneven distribution of wealth among people in the United States, the gap between the rich and everyone else, has grown markedly and by all major statistics and measures for over the last 40 years. And the recent tax bill has made that even more clear to us. The U.S., and this was something that surprised me, the U.S. ranks around in the 30th percentile in income inequality globally, meaning that 70% of countries in the world have a more equal income distribution. Not a surprise, but those statistics are pretty startling, at least they were to me. In Dr. William Barber's book, that was the common read for the UUA in 2016-17, called The Third Reconstruction. He writes, half a century later, the conditions that motivated the 1968 Poor People's Campaign have only worsened, making the need for a new moral movement more urgent than ever. Compared to 1968, 60% more Americans are living below the official poverty line today, a total of 41 million people. The gap between our government's discretionary spending on the military versus anti-poverty programs has grown from 2-1 in the height of the Vietnam War to 4-1 today. And we need to look at the difference. It's really great when people say, well, we're going to raise the minimum wage. Have you ever looked at what the minimum wage would really buy in this country? It certainly is not a wage one could live with. And so another phrase or words have been coined, the living wage. What we really need to do is look at what is the living wage. That is what it really costs to live in this country, not just the minimum that we can get by with. And of course, all these issues, economic and otherwise, are intersectional. We don't have affordable housing. We don't have inadequate education. Sorry, my notes are. I raised the size of my font to 16 now, instead of only 14. For years, I got by with 14. And I thought it would make it easier, but I don't know, maybe there's a brain or something involved in here. But we have a lack of affordable housing. We have insufficient income with many people working many jobs and still can't necessarily support their families. There's inadequate education for many in our communities, lack of adequate food or food that is not really healthy food, insufficient health care, and the list goes on. But that's enough about facts and statistics. We're really talking about the issues and stories of real people. They're our neighbors, they're our friends, they're our fellow congregants. The American dream has become a myth. There's a concentration of power and wealth that has skyrocketed. Dr. King's dream of justice and equality is fractured. Half of all Americans are impoverished or struggling as the middle class shrinks and billionaires take the profits. Where is our commitment to the common good, to physical and spiritual well-being, because they are interconnected? It's not just physical well-being, but our spiritual lives are affected by that as well. I think about a story that I heard once. This was a story that took place in a church. the Sunday morning, and there was, as people came and gathered, as you do out here, there was a man kind of leaning on the stairway. You could see from the shoes that he had on that they were full of holes, had his hat pulled down over him, and he was just kind of sitting down there on the steps as people came in. And imagine you're doing that this morning. You came in this morning and you saw somebody out there on the patio just kind of not looking like he's doing very well. And what might we have done? I'll tell you what the people did in the story. They kind of walked over the other side of the stairway and went up the stairs and started whispering to each other about who that could possibly be sitting there, and should they call the police to get him to move. So finally they all went inside and sat down, and they didn't see, the minister didn't appear to be up in the pulpit yet, and so they just sat there and kind of were patient, as you would be, of course, in a church, not talking. And then they see this man shuffling down the center aisle, and they go, oh my gosh, not only is he sitting on our steps, but he's coming into our church. That's disgusting. He probably smells, and it's, ooh, it's awful. And when the man got up to the front, you probably have figured, some of you figured this out. The man got up to the front and turned around. He took off his hat. And the preacher said, I guess you know what we're going to be talking about this morning. So here we are as good Unitarian Universalist. And I think what sometimes happens, and this has become more clear to me now that I'm serving in the Universalist Unitarian Church of Santa Paula, because they were Universalists first. And when the merger happened in 1961, they kept the Universalists first because that's what they had been when the two groups came together. But I think that there is a spark in our Universalist heritage that is really important when we talk about this subject. We talk about income inequality, and at our General Assembly in 2014, they voted to make income inequality a study action item. Last year, we voted to accept it in principle, and this year in Kansas City, we will vote to make it a statement of conscience. But when we look at those statements, as wonderful as they are, they don't have any meaning unless we're willing to do something about it. To love people enough to care what's happening in our country, and not blame it on any political system, but simply say, what is it that we can do? Our seven principles, and I'm really glad, I didn't know you were going to do that, but that you went through the principles, because I think, this is just my theory, so you don't have to believe it, that the principles are somewhat divided as to whether they are Universalist or Unitarian. And at least from my point of view, and these happen to be my three favorites. I know you're not supposed to have favorites, but I can't help it in terms of these principles. The first one that I can always remember is that we affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Now, that doesn't mean just the people you like or the people who believe the same things that you do. It says every person. Not every company. People say, well, that's confusing because sometimes companies are called persons in their legal documents. Well, we're talking about living, breathing, human persons. And then there's the second one that's also one of my favorites. We affirm and promote, and I always forget this one. Why do I always forget this one? Justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. Justice, equity, and compassion. And I think sometimes we think of equity as being the same thing as equality. It's not. Equality simply says level playing field. Equity says people are not all the same. Equality for one person is not the same as equality for another. If you are disadvantaged in some way, even if they say, well, everybody who makes a certain amount of money can do this, you don't make that amount of money, you're not one that is equal because you can't reach that space. So I think it's important that they chose the word, and this was voted on by a General Assembly back in 1985, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. And my third most favorite is that we affirm and promote, and notice it's not just affirm, it's promote. That means we don't just say it, we do it, is the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. Now, sometimes that's narrowly defined as relating to the ecosystem, relating to ecology. And certainly we don't want to leave out the four-footeds and the other creatures. But we're talking about interrelationships between people. We are interrelated as people. And so here we are this morning talking about what we can do. And I was looking at the description with a quotation from the play Hamilton and realized that I'm not immune to this elitism either. What does that statement assume? It assumes you all know what the play Hamilton is and is about. It assumes that you may even have enough money to buy tickets, which is no easy thing for sure, or that you at least could buy the whole set of CDs, which is once again not accessible to everybody. What we need to look at is to figure out what we can do, how we can make a difference. And so I looked at, I had some ideas, but then I looked at what the UUA had put out on its website about things we could do about economic inequality. One of the things is to look at how we think about money. What is it that we use our money for, and do we use it to support our values? I know that cup of coffee at Starbucks is amazing, but what is it that, and I, you know, please understand, I have a gold card at Starbucks. But here's the thing. How do I spend my income to make a difference in the world? What companies do I support? What legislation do I look at and say, I really want to support that legislation? Support. Now, this is probably a stretch. One of the things they suggested is a flash mob. I don't know how many of you have ever participated in a flash mob. Getting out and dancing for and raising all kinds of ruckus for economic inequality. But, you know, if that's what you're into, then you just show up someplace in public and do a flash mob. I don't know who wrote some of these. Spending our money compassionately. Looking at what companies we know of are equitable in their treatment of their workers. Not shopping at places where you know they're not. Mobilizing ourselves at the ballot box. Voting for those laws and those people who support the things that we stand for. Engaging and finding out more about this topic, finding out what's really going on out there and how we, not somebody else. It's great. So, you know, I can't really do anything. There's a great quote in our hymnal by Edward Everett Hale. I am only one, but I am one. I can't do everything, but I can do something. And because I cannot do everything, I will not fail to do the things that I can do. So here we are. We can go have petition drives. We can talk to other people. We cannot hand out money to people on the street. I'm sorry. I've worked at this business long enough, and I know it's heartrending. And I have, on occasion, given people money. Give those people food. Give those people bus tickets. Give those people things that they can really use. Or invest in an organization that you know is providing for those people. Organize postcard drives, whatever you can do. Participate in interfaith work. Work with our state network, the Unitarian Universalist Justice Ministry, to do things in our world. They had a campaign for water that really accomplished incredible things, provided water in communities in California where they did not have drinkable water to make a difference. To develop experiences where people are inspired, to get over the idea of the guy sitting out on the front steps of a porch is someone you really don't want to have anything to do with. To look at our congregations, to see why it is that we are mostly middle class, that we are mostly highly educated, that, and this is something that really bugs me, and where did you go to graduate school? We do that. And we don't really think that it's somehow off-putting or disrespectful to someone who has maybe not even a high school education. So we can't just look out there at those people, those other people who don't care about the poor. Sometimes we need to look at ourselves and say, how is it that I may be reflecting those kinds of prejudices as well? We can develop a collaborative with other congregations in our area to make a difference. And I know this congregation has done some things that are really wonderful for the people in this community. I remember one day that I was driving up here, and this may have been a while ago, that you were collecting winter coats for people out in the parking lot. And that's wonderful. But charity is limited. It can't really touch as many people as changing systems. And so one of the things an organization I belong to and their statement of purpose is change beyond charity. So the idea is, how can we change things to make a difference for people? You've probably all heard the saying, well, if you give a man a fish, he can eat for a day. If you give a man a fishing rod, he can fish for a lifetime and feed his family. And I had a speaker at one point who said, no, here's the deal. Give the man a fish pond so that he can, in fact, provide for fish for his whole community. Our faith, I believe, as Unitarian Universalists, calls us to counter fear with courage, to speak out for a collective vision of a more just, equitable, and compassionate society. Each of us, I think, needs to finish this sermon for himself or herself. Decide what you're going to do. Decide what it means to promote justice, equity, and compassion. To believe that we all have inherent worth and dignity. And sometimes that's hard to find. I've had a number of people say, inherent worth and dignity? What about some of those really, really, really bad people? Why do we stop worrying about those really, really bad other people and say, somewhere down there, there may be some inherent worth and dignity. They've just forgotten what it was. And maybe we should worry about how we're feeling about the inherent worth and dignity of every person. And realizing that we are all interconnected. What happens to one of us affects all of us. So we must both affirm and promote, to challenge ourselves and each other. And the timeline begins yesterday, or at least today, when we don't want to throw away our shot. Let's do what we can. Thank you.